Those of you who are back this evening for another period of study, such a privilege it is for us to be able to come together like this, and a blessing it is for us to be able to gather as family to one another, as children of God, to look into His Word and to be reaffirmed in our faith and our belief that He is there and that He's going to take care of us. Looking forward to spending the next few minutes together doing that very thing. If you were here last Sunday evening, hopefully you remember that that lesson was intended to be an introduction, really, to a series of lessons on the origin of everything. That there is a God who created all that we see. I noted, shared with you last week, the conversation that I had about 30 years ago with a friend who had been doing a lot of teaching in India, and how he told me that at that time over there, you know, you couldn't just go up to somebody in New Delhi and point to book, chapter, and verse and convince them to obey the gospel that way, because they weren't familiar with the gospel. They weren't familiar with the Bible, had never been taught to have any deference toward it or what is written in the scriptures. No, he said, you've got to back up from there. And you have to, first of all, establish the most basic of truths with these people, that there is a God who has created all things. Now, you establish that. Well, from there, you can work on establishing how this God has spoken, how He has revealed His will to mankind through the Word. And then, once you've established that, then maybe you can start looking at the Scriptures and teach them what the Word says they must do in order to be saved. And I shared with you last week that I've taken note that in the ensuing decades since that conversation with my friend, the thought has occurred to me more and more that really we're going to have to follow a similar pattern of teaching people even in this nation and this culture. Because folks in our own culture have become much more skeptical about the things that we believe with regard to how everything came to be. Questions are asked now that maybe weren't asked so much 30, 40, 50, 60 years ago that we need to be ready to answer, because they can be answered. But the level of skepticism toward beliefs such as ours has risen tremendously in recent years, and we need to be able to deal with it and answer those questions that are being raised. And we noted that this is not a problem necessarily, because it's very similar to what our earliest brethren faced when they were spreading the gospel in the first century. We noted that sometimes our earliest brethren, as they went out into the world, would sometimes have to tailor their messages to the people that they were addressing, depending on how familiar they were with the God or with the Scriptures or what they believed. For example, we noted that when people were speaking to Jews, for example, say in Acts 2, on the day of Pentecost, that crowd was almost exclusively Jewish. They knew the Scriptures. Or Acts 17, early on when Paul is in the synagogue in Thessalonica. Well, when they were talking to those people, they would begin by appealing to the Scriptures and reason with the people from the Scriptures to establish that Jesus was the promised Messiah. But they would begin farther up the road, because they already had the common ground with their listeners that they believed in God and they accepted the Scriptures. But now if you look at the situation, say when they went to Lystra in Acts 14 or to Athens in Acts 17, well, these were people that were not familiar with the God of the Hebrews, of God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And so they wouldn't begin by appealing to the Scriptures in those places. They would begin by establishing God as the one who has made all things. And you can see how that in Acts 14, Paul referred to the God who made the heavens, the earth, and the sea at Lystra. At Athens, he appealed to God who made the world. So sometimes they would have to take the people where they were at and then work from there to bring them to the Lord. And that's what we're going to have to do more and more with people in our own culture. We know that God has given us His special revelation, the Word of God, so that we can know what we must do in order to be pleasing to Him. But we also noted last week that He's given us His general revelation as well. Well, the general revelation is what you see when you go outside and look around you. And it's the revelation of God as seen in the book of nature, such as Paul describes in Romans 1, which we will be dealing with later on in these studies. But he has given us this special revelation, or this general revelation, for our use just as surely as he has given us the special revelation. Understand, of course, the general revelation cannot help us learn what we must do to be saved, but it can certainly provide support to that fundamental truth that all men must accept, that God is, which of course is what we are told in Hebrews 11 and verse 6, is necessary for anyone. You must believe that God is, and that he is a rewarder of those who seek him. So this afternoon, I want to jump off from where we started last week and kind of begin in earnest our consideration of where everything came from and why it is reasonable to believe as we do what we do about where everything we came from. These studies are intended to establish the fact that everything we see, the universe around us, was designed and created and is continually maintained, I might add, so that it can be a place for us to live. And it is the only reasonable explanation, as I believe will become evident as we continue on through these studies. But to establish a jumping off point, as it were, for this series, let's begin by considering two very basic questions that pertain to a study like this. And they have to do with the fact of the universe's existence. That the universe exists, I hope, is self-evident to everyone here, because we exist within the universe. And I'm pretty well convinced that I exist and that you exist. And if we exist within the universe, maybe you've seen something like this before. The universe exists, else we wouldn't be here. So the universe exists. We want to ask why. How do we explain the universe's existence? Why is it here? There's a couple of different options regarding how the universe exists, how its existence at the present time is explained. The first such option is that it has always existed. It's here because it's always been here. It was here before any of us, a long time before any of us. And so some have assumed, in times past mostly, that it has always been, that the universe itself in which we live is eternal. But I got to tell you, such a notion is one that has become less and less reasonable to pretty much everybody who studies such things. I suppose there will always be a few holdouts on matters such as this, but we are getting to the point, even among those who deny that there is a creator, but the majority who have paid much attention to such things and ponder such things believe that it is not a viable option to believe that the universe has always been here. Probably the biggest reason is, at least in the scientific community, is the pretty much universally accepted second law of thermodynamics, also known as the law of entropy. Now, for those of you who, like me, wouldn't remember this real good from high school physics, this law states that over time, any system, up to and including the universe, any system will move from a state of order to a state of disorder. It always moves toward greater disorder over time. Albert Einstein considered this to be the principle, the premier law of all science, and we can see its reality in even the most mundane of things. We can see it in things like a garden. I'm sorry, but I couldn't help but think of my kids' bedrooms as well. But, you know, left unattended, such things break down over time and they become less orderly. In order for them to maintain order, there has to be some intelligent energy injected into these things in order to maintain order. Otherwise, the natural tendency of anything, of any machine, of any system, the natural tendency is to move toward breaking down and move toward disorder. But our universe is very orderly. Our universe is very orderly. I think back to Genesis chapter 1 and verse 14, a verse that ever since I first took note of it as an adult has really struck me and kind of struck me as being neat. In Genesis 1 and 14, it's written there, "Then God said, let there be lights in the firmament of the heavens to divide the day from the night, and let them be for signs and seasons and for days and years." You know, the sun and the moon and the stars, they weren't just created and placed there just to look pretty for us. Now, I do think they're beautiful. But you realize God is saying here they would serve a purpose at the time that He created them. They enabled men to mark the passage of time. They've enabled men to navigate the oceans as well. But God speaks here of marking the passage of time. And to this day, they can serve that very purpose. I mean, if you've studied astronomy carefully, like I have not, but if you have, you can go out at night, you can look up in the sky, and you can get an idea of what time of year it is. Because the heavenly bodies move in a predictable and consistent manner at all times. They were created and designed to do that. This is why about 4 years ago, it was 2017, I remember that. About 4 years ago, remember there was this big solar eclipse that took place. I don't know what it was like down here. We were actually in the path of totality. And I got to tell you, that was pretty cool. At about noon, it turned nighttime at our house. I mean, even the bugs that you hear at night, even they started singing. But anyway, we knew ahead of time that eclipse was coming. Everybody, they were selling these special glasses for weeks ahead of time because we knew this eclipse was coming. How could we know the eclipse was coming? Because the heavenly bodies move in a predictable manner, and they knew when the moon was going to pass between the earth and the sun in that way. The heavenly bodies have always moved in a predictable manner because the universe is orderly, even to this very day. But here's the thing. It is generally agreed that a universe that has always existed would not have the orderliness that we now see because of this law of entropy. Over time, it would break down unless there was something or someone maintaining it, which we'll talk about later. It's had too much time to run down and break down, though, if it's always existed. Hence, more and more people of every philosophical stripe are realizing that it is only reasonable to believe that it could not have existed without a beginning, some point in the past at which it was all set in motion. Henry Morris was a fairly prominent scientist. He held a PhD in hydraulic engineering. He chaired the civil engineering departments at the University of Louisiana Lafayette and then at Virginia Tech. In other words, this is a man that spent a great deal of time studying how the world and how the universe works. And he stated very plainly and simply, the second law of thermodynamics requires the universe to have had a beginning. But now I do need to confess something about Dr. Wallace. He was a believer in creation. He believed in God. He believed God created all things. And so, in the interest of equal time, I'll go ahead and also note the words of another man who was not a believer, a fellow by the name of Robert Jastrow, who was a self-proclaimed agnostic. He held a PhD in theoretical physics, was the founding director of NASA's Goddard Institute of Space Studies. In other words, he spent a great deal of time studying the universe and the world and how it all works. And he stated, only as a result of the most recent discoveries can we say, with a fair amount of confidence, that the world has not existed forever. That it began abruptly, without an apparent cause, in a blinding event that defies scientific explanation. I think that's kind of interesting. Here's a man that wants to believe that everything can be explained scientifically. We talked about scientism last week. And here's a man that would believe that, but he said, but this defies scientific explanation. But the point I'm making is, it's pretty well accepted that the physical universe is not eternal. It had a beginning. And there are fewer and fewer people who are finding it possible to deny this. But of course, if it had a beginning, that raises another question. And this is the big question that we want to consider tonight. That question is, if the universe had a beginning, what brought it about? What made the universe start up? What is the cause that brought about the effect that is the universe? Well, as we just noted, scientific evidence has accumulated to the point where no one who desires to be taken seriously can deny that it had a beginning. But some, in desperation, have decided to attack the notion that there had to be a cause in order to bring about the beginning, in order to bring about the effect that is the universe. What they're saying is that the effect that is the universe did not have a cause. The thing is, science says every effect must have a cause. In fact, going back to good old Dr. Jastrow here, the agnostic that we quoted just a moment ago, when he was asked about the possibility that the earth could have sprung into existence or the universe could have sprung into existence without a cause, you can see what it is, an effect without a cause? That's not the world of science. It is the world of witchcraft, of wild events and the whims of demons, a medieval world that science has tried to banish. As scientists, what are we to make of this picture? I do not know. I have to tell you, reading some of Dr. Jastrow's quotes and works, he was a man that really had a problem. He had a lot of I don't knows, and how do we explain this? Because he had ruled out a creator. And so you see that here as well. I don't know how to explain this, but I know that there had to be a cause. Dr. Jastrow knew that there had to be a cause to the beginning. As an agnostic, obviously, he didn't want to consider that the cause could be a creator. Hence, his not knowing what to make of the situation in which the universe clearly had a cause that defied scientific explanation. But the notion of the universe beginning without a cause was clearly ridiculous to him. The universe had a beginning at some time in the past, and there was something that had to have caused it to begin. It's not just religionists and creationists who hold this to be so. It is scientists as well. So we've got to think in terms of something, some action, some event precipitating subsequent events that led to what we see today all around us. And at the most general level, this too can be seen as this choice between two alternatives. One of these possibilities is that everything just happened. The universe is not eternal. It had a beginning point, but what happened was it created itself from nothingness. There was nothing. And then there was something. And from what I've heard, what it was there was something that basically amounted to all the matter in the universe, in a speck, a tiny speck of immense mass. And then that something created itself and organized itself from nothingness. There was nothing, there was something, then the something organized itself over time into the amazingly complex universe we see today. And of course, the other possibility is that all came into existence and was arranged by something or someone anterior and superior to itself. Well, of course, it is this second option that is the biblical view of the origin, as seen in verse 1 of the Bible. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. Really, it's got to be one of these two very generally described causes. Either some intelligence caused it to happen, or it just happened spontaneously and randomly, if there was no intelligence behind it. And as there are only these two possible alternatives, well, evidence against one is evidence for the other. Eliminate the reasonableness of belief in one of these options, and you're left as the only other one, as the only reasonable option. And we talked about this last week. You know, you can't prove either. You can't prove creation. You can't prove spontaneous creation, as it were. But could you eliminate one as being reasonable to believe? If so, then you were left with the other as the only reasonable alternative. And again, it is the second of the options that we talked about a moment ago that the Bible weighs in favor of. We noted Genesis chapter 1 and verse 1 that states very plainly that God created the heavens and the earth. The Bible further supports this alternative in Hebrews chapter 11, in the passage that Vince read for us a few moments ago, in which the writer says, "By faith we understand that the worlds were framed by the word of God, so that the things which are seen were not made of things which are visible." And note here, again, that the writer says that it is by faith that we understand this. And as we noted last week, really, no matter what it is that you believe about how life, the universe, and everything came to be, you rely on faith to support your belief. No one was there at the beginning to witness it happening or to document it. And whatever happened cannot be recreated under controlled laboratory settings. So it can't be proven scientifically. Every person believes what they believe about this based on faith that they have developed. Presumably, hopefully, is based on evidence. Their faith is based on evidence that they've considered. And again, if we can use the evidence available to eliminate one alternative as being reasonable, then the truth must be somewhere in the alternative that remains. So in our remaining time this evening, let's start thinking about some things, concepts perhaps, that might have an effect on which of these alternatives that we've laid out is more reasonable. Is it more reasonable to believe that everything just happened? Or is it more reasonable to believe that things were designed and created? We want to talk about some concepts that might have an impact on how each of those seems to us. And the first concept that I want us to think about in this regard as we begin these studies is the simple concept of time. How much time is required for each of the alternative explanations that we have laid out for how the universe has come into being? How much time is required for that option as compared to how much time is available for that option? How much time do we have to work with? You see, time is really of supreme importance to those who assert that the universe has no intelligent designer behind it. If you believe that there is a purely naturalistic explanation for the origin of the universe, time is important to you. Those that believe this need a lot of time for their theories to have an air of reasonableness. And I mean a lot of time. One popular saying among those who hold to naturalistic explanations for the origin of the universe is this: given enough time, anything is possible. I mean, with an unlimited amount of time to work with, anything could happen, right? I don't know if I accept that statement as true or not. But you know what? Let's just say for the sake of argument, okay, we'll give you that. The fact is, there is not an unlimited amount of time with which to work. And I'm talking about even from the scientific community's perspective. Those who need a lot of time for their theory to work are, in fact, limited by science and by nature as to how much time they can allow for. You know, if there were so much limitations, they could say, for example, well, the universe must be 674 quadrillion years old. Now check the numbers, that's quadrillion. They could say the universe is 674 quadrillion years old. By the way, that still wouldn't be enough time, but I'm just pulling out a number here. I'm just throwing numbers out to make a point right now. We'll look at numbers a bit more closely later on in the series. But for right now, let's just say for the sake of argument, 674 quadrillion years, if we were to say that would be enough for these naturalistic theories to hold true, there's still a problem. Because even those who believe in the spontaneous existence of the universe have to acknowledge that the universe is not that old. Nowhere near that old. I've done some reading on the subject. I guess I could say I stayed at a Holiday Inn Express once, but I've done some reading on the subject, and I've talked to some friends in the scientific community. Got a friend that works for NASA up in Alabama. Thrown some things at him and asked about. And I understand that a big factor in the determination through natural means of the universe's age is the rate of the expansion of the universe. You may be aware that the universe is constantly expanding outwards. And astronomers and the like have observed the red shift of light to determine the rate of expansion and how it may have increased or decreased over time. They've determined the expansion of the universe, the rate of expansion. And then what they've done is they've extrapolated backwards to the point where all the matter in the universe would have been at one single point. And they agree we can go back no farther than that. That's the beginning point. And based largely on this, the estimate is that the universe is about 15 billion years old. That looks a lot smaller than the first number, doesn't it? Now, actually, what I've heard was the estimate is more like 13.8 billion. I rounded up to 15 billion, makes the math easier. And what's a billion years between friends anyway, right? But this is the time constraint that those who oppose the idea of a creator must operate under. Everything that randomly came into existence and formed itself and arranged itself and designed itself must have done so in this amount of time, in the last 15 billion years. And just, I'll throw this number out now, we'll talk more about it later. The 15 billion years is the age they give for the universe. The age given for the earth is about 4.5 billion years. So the earth apparently came into existence about 10 billion years after the universe came. And you might want to just keep those numbers stored away for future reference. We'll talk more about that later as well. But keep in mind that the amount of time available has to be factored into one's consideration of how the universe came into being. Again, the person who believes that it sprang into existence by itself needs an awful lot of time. But they've only got the last 15 billion years to work with. And whenever that beginning was, something had to cause it to take place. Like I said, there was this speck that would have been smaller even than that dot, according to what we're told. And that at some point, a big explosion suddenly thrust all the matter that was in the speck out that had come from some unknown somewhere and that had been compressed into this tiny speck. It was thrown outward, exploded outward in a way that it organized itself into the cosmos. By the way, the word cosmos has reference to an orderly universe. Organized itself into the cosmos that we see today, again, that operates under consistent and predictable natural laws. But let me draw your attention back to something we mentioned a few minutes ago. Remember that second law of thermodynamics? That says that systems only go from chaos to, or go from order to chaos. It's an accepted natural law that says that order moves toward disorder, and never the other way around, by the way. This law does not allow for our orderly universe to have begun from chaos. Isn't chaos what you've got in an explosion? And if you begin with chaos and leave the system alone, unmaintained, for a long period of time, say 15 billion years, that's 15 billion years in which science says it must be getting more disorganized. So you see how the need for vast amounts of time for this theory to work kind of works against itself in some ways. Because our highly ordered universe would never have been more orderly than it was at the beginning. It could not have developed from chaos. The law of entropy, coupled with the time required for spontaneous organization, is powerful evidence that not only did the universe have a specific beginning point, but it must have been ordered and orderly at that time. From the beginning. Because, again, according to purely naturalistic laws, it would never be more orderly than it was at the beginning. And yet, as we noted a minute ago, it's pretty orderly right now. And regarding a possible cause, while we're talking about this notion of an explosion of energy setting everything into motion, there's that obvious question that comes up from time to time. What caused the explosion? What caused the bang? Here is another effect without a known cause, and an effect for which science has not provided a cause. Now maybe you've seen before an illustration or heard about the illustration of a guy that takes a box full of machine parts and shakes them up and shakes them and shakes them, and he opens it up to see if something of a machine is formed from the shaking. Or one illustration I heard one time was a guy goes to an auto parts store, sets some explosives and blows the store up, and a fully formed engine comes out. Those illustrations really are not correct for showing what Big Bang proponents argue. If you want to illustrate what they believe in this regard, what you have to do is you have to take that box of machine parts, set it down, and wait. Or you have to go to that auto parts store and rope it off and let no one have any access to it, and then just step back and wait for something spontaneous to cause it to blow up. Because if I shake up that box, let's say I shake that box and let's say some little machine comes out of it, but you know what has happened? There has been some intelligent action taken. Well, I use intelligence where I'm concerned, but somebody took some deliberate action on that box to shake it up. So it wasn't spontaneous. That auto parts store that somebody blew up, some intelligence went into blowing the auto parts store up. There again, you've got a problem because intelligence was required. The effect that is the universe, the beginning of the universe, had to have a cause. And it must have been something with intelligence. And the cause must have been necessity, have existed prior to the beginning of the universe. And if all that is natural and physical exists within the universe, then it stands to reason that whatever this cause is that existed prior to the universe must not be natural or physical. And again, what did Jesus say about God in John chapter 4 and verse 24? God is not natural. God is not physical. God is spirit. He does not require a natural habitat to survive in. It makes sense for a being like this to be the cause of what we see. Many of you know that I am from Huntsville, Alabama. Huntsville, Alabama has a nickname. It's called the Rocket City. I grew up there in the 70s. You may have seen the big Saturn V rocket that took men to the moon. There's a big one. There's actually two in Huntsville. One's a real one that's laying down inside a building. It could actually function. Then one's just a mock-up that stands along Interstate 565 to let you know you're in Huntsville. It's right there at the Space and Rocket Center, the Space Museum there in Huntsville. The man that oversaw the design of the Saturn V was running the Marshall Space Flight Center in Huntsville back in the 60s and 70s. A man by the name of Wernher von Braun. You may have heard of him. If you go to Huntsville, you will have heard of him. If you're into astronomy, you might join the von Braun Astronomical Society. If you want to go up and look at the stars, you might go to the von Braun Observatory up in Montesano Mountain. If you want to go to a concert or a hockey game, you'll probably go to the von Braun Center in downtown Huntsville. He's kind of a big deal in Huntsville, and he's kind of a big deal in science. He's considered the father of rocket scientists. He was one of the Germans that came over from after the war and became very prominent in the space exploration community. A very well-respected scientist even to this day. And Dr. von Braun, a man who studied science and the universe and the way the universe works, stated that the vast mysteries of the universe should only confirm our belief in the certainty of its creator. I find it as difficult to understand a scientist who does not acknowledge the presence of a superior rationality behind the existence of the universe as it is to comprehend a theologian who would deny the advances of science. To Dr. von Braun, an intelligent designer really was and is the most logical explanation for how the beginning came about, regardless of when you think that beginning was. Though the time of the beginning, when it was, is something we'll talk about later on as well. For now, let's just go ahead and wrap up for tonight what we've talked about. First of all, I want to take note and remind everybody that it is virtually beyond question by anyone, including those who deny a creator, that the universe did have a beginning. It is not eternal. That is certainly what I believe. As the Bible itself states, that the heavens, the universe, and the earth did have a beginning point. Again, that would be the first sentence of the Bible. There was a beginning. And if it had a beginning, while there are those who still believe otherwise, it is only logical and it is widely accepted that the beginning had to have had a cause. The problem for many is that as they reject certain possibilities out of hand, they can't figure out what the cause could possibly be. Many such prefer to think that the cause must have been some random happenstance event that they have not yet determined the nature of. And if that is the case, if the universe is the product of random interaction of atoms and cells and the like, then a lot of time is required for all the billions and billions of pieces of the puzzle to fall into place. But that becomes a problem as one begins to ponder whether there has been enough time for these things to happen? And if there has been enough time, why would stuff be getting more organized rather than less organized? But again, if you take away the luxury of limitless amounts of time available for the proposed processes to take place, you go a long way in eliminating random natural occurrences as a reasonable explanation for all that we see. Again, those who deny a creator have been limited to 15 billion years using their own methodology. If the things they say occurred could not occur in that period of time, then their idea is eliminated as a reasonable explanation. And then, again, as I noted just a moment ago, we still have the law of entropy to deal with as well, working against them throughout that entire time. Creationists, on the other hand, well, we don't need vast amounts of time for our theory to work. There are creationists who believe that God created over vast amounts of time. We'll be considering them further along in our studies. I have several friends that hold this view, and I've talked with some of them who hold this position pretty fervently. But even they do not argue for vast amounts of time out of a sense that God needs that much time. He doesn't, He didn't, and He wouldn't. Believers in an omnipotent God who stands above nature and physics find plenty of time in the book of nature to support their notion that He spoke all things into existence. There is ample evidence to cause one to call into question the reasonableness of a random event causing the beginning of the universe. And of course, evidence against a random event is evidence for an intelligent act undertaken by some form of life that is of a different nature than life as we have known it. At this stage of our thoughts, you might call it what you will. I'm going to go ahead and call it a creator. And of course, this is not the end of our consideration of these questions. I hope to provide further evidence, or not provide, maybe unveil evidence that's already there for an intelligence designer by way of providing evidence against the alternative as we continue to look next week at the Earth itself within the universe and the establishment of life on Earth. Just a little bit of a teaser for next week. For now, I'll just thank you for your attention and invite you to get ready to sing the invitation song. I hope that everyone here believes that there is a God. And if that's the case, that's great. Then maybe these lessons will help equip you to go out and talk to people about the existence of God. But if you do believe that there's a God, as I do, then you need to recognize He is a God with whom you have to deal at some point. Better to deal with Him now. Learn what He would have you to do. Learn what He would have you to live. Live according to His will and be ready to meet Him at the end. He is there waiting at the end. Make no mistake about it. And if you're not ready when you reach the end, oh, I don't even want to think about that. It's too unpleasant. Be prepared to meet the Lord in eternity. And if you're not prepared at this moment, you can be in the next moment. You could confess faith in Jesus, be baptized with Him for the remission of your sins, and prepared to meet Him in eternity. If you're a child of God that's drifted from the way and you need to make things right with the Lord, again, we stand ready to assist you if that is what you need from us. There is a God. He wants you to live with Him in heaven. Please do what you have to do to get there. Please come now as we stand and sing together.
There is beyond the azure blue
a God concealed from human sight. He tinted skies with heavenly hue and framed the world.